It's just gone 13 minutes after 6 and you're still listening to the SAFM Market Update. Tomorrow we'll all be listening with bated breath as the Finance Minister delivers his 2018 budget speech. So earlier today I caught up with Rob Cooper. He's a tax expert and the Director of Legislation at SAGE. And we spoke about some of the thoughts he thinks that the Minister should clarify in his statement tomorrow. This is what he had to say.
Well, the challenges are very obvious. Just to start there, the hole in the bucket that the Minister of Finance has to fill is big, 50 billion plus. So whether he can cut expenditure, what he can increase, we'll have to see, but it's going to be a difficult balancing job. The area that I'm involved in is around personal income taxes. Mm-hmm. So there's a very real danger that just like last year, that they're going to increase the personal income tax rates. Just to say that personal income tax is one of the two low-hanging fruits as far as bringing in additional tax revenue is concerned in a quick and simple way. The other one is the fuel levy. If they adjust the fuel levy, they just change the meters on the pumps and the money flows into Treasury. And personal income tax rates, they just adjust the scales and the payroll systems of the country calculate the tax every month and it flows into SARS. So they're two very easy ways of getting in money quickly and painlessly. I hope that they don't take the big step that they took last year with the 45% increase. I think it's starting to get to a position where they might be killing the goose that lays the golden egg. But we could see changes. For example, normally they adjust the tax tables to cater for inflation so that if you have only an inflation-adjusted increase to your salary, that it doesn't push you up into a higher tax bracket and you actually get taxed more than what your increase is. So what they can do, and they've done it in the past, is to adjust those inflation increases for lower-income individuals, perhaps up to middle of middle income, and then the higher-income people, they don't adjust it. So that as a result of inflation, all the higher income people will be paying not only the inflation, but the extra taxes.
Then there is tax that is very sensitive, and that's VAT. And a lot of people have been talking about it every other, I think, budget presentation. Will they hike it? Will they not? What do you think might happen with VAT? Could this be the year they hike?
I think that a VAT hike is going to depend on whether they're going to be able to cut expenditure sufficiently to make up for what they could have gained by increasing VAT. As you said, a VAT hike has been on the cards for a couple of years. They've held off because of social sensitivities. But according to economists, a 1% increase in the VAT rate is roughly about an extra 20 billion rand. So if they're looking for at least 50 billion rand and they can't find it very easily elsewhere, then it arguably points towards a 2% VAT increase, which then is about 40 billion rand. So it does seem as though this could be the time for VAT increase. Our VAT rate in South Africa is arguably low in comparison to other countries. So that also tends to move towards a VAT increase. But the sensitivities are dramatic. Mm. It will affect lower income people who aren't taxed as we are, as employees, that have to pay VAT on everything. So they would have to take steps to counter the increase in VAT. And that could obviously be perhaps extending the zero rate at foodstuffs and other items for lower income people. It could possibly be an increase to social grants to cater for the higher VAT. But that's a double-edged sword because by paying more for social grants, it's a bigger amount of expenditure going out. And then the budget has to cater for that extra expenditure.
And there's also other things that we're going to be looking out for, especially when it comes to the NHI, the direction it will take, how we'll fund it. And there was talks of scrapping tax credits. What effect do you see that happening if that's the route we go in order for us to fund NHI?
Well, again, a very sensitive area. I don't think that anybody can argue that the principles and the intention of the National Health Insurance is not good. To increase the standards of the public health care system and to increase its outreach into rural areas is obviously very, very necessary. You can't have babies dying because the incubator is broken. So we must have it. There must be an improvement to the public health care system. But there are two aspects to it. The one I'm not really qualified to talk on, but it seems that the direction they're going is to almost replace the private medical assistance scheme with medical aid schemes and force everyone onto the public public healthcare system, but that doesn't seem like a good plan for me. And then the second aspect of it is the medical tax credits that you mentioned. For many, many years, we've had either a deduction or the medical tax credit to assist employees by virtue of it. Of tax relief to be able to afford their contributions to a private medical scheme. Now, in last year's budget, there was a one-line mention that they are looking at scaling back or removing the medical tax credits. There's been more and more talk of it. There are two aspects of this which is problematical. The one is that about 1.8 million is the estimate of individuals, lower to medium income individuals, will not be able to afford their contributions to the medical aid scheme unless the tax relief is there. So if it's taken away, they will have to make a choice, an affordability choice, to leave their medical scheme and go on to the public healthcare system, which will mean a lot of extra people going on the public healthcare system and putting more pressure on the public healthcare system, which at this stage is not a good thing. And then the second point on this is just that it seems like it's putting the cart before the horse. If the public healthcare system was at a good standard and countrywide, then people had a choice. You could decide whether you want to, you know, pay the money and belong to a private medical scheme or whether you're going to go on to the public healthcare system. Then it's a choice that can be made, and every individual then has the right to make the choice. So I would hope that they hold back on that medical tax credit for another year or two, try and find the money elsewhere for the National Health Insurance System, and at least get the standards up before they take that step.
The one thing that everyone has always talked about, and perhaps we might even see it go further, is the employment tax incentive. What's your view on that one?
My view in general is that I would very sincerely like it to succeed. I'm not saying that it hasn't succeeded up to now, but I think it could perform better than what it has. Employment tax incentive was brought into being in January 2014 for a three-year period, which was then due to expire at the end of December 2016. Treasury did a review of its success with dubious results, in my opinion, but they extended its life for 2 years until February 2019. So in this coming budget tomorrow, I don't expect there to be any radical changes to the Employment Tax Incentive Act. But if they do take it further, in my opinion, what's needed is a fairly radical simplification of the Employment Tax Incentive requirements. There are provisions at the moment which make it cumbersome and expensive for employers to administer and do all of the requirements. And there are also some requirements which are cumbersome and difficult for SARS to perform. So I would like to see the ETI being extended. Our youth unemployment situation is desperate, and we must do whatever we can in the country to rectify it. But I would like to see in the future simplification. Simplification of tax rules always leads to better results, better compliance, better results.
That's Rob Cooper, who is a tax expert and director of legislation at Sage.